Old Trinity Church on the edge of the Blackwater Marsh in Somerset County in Maryland was built in 1671, making it one of the oldest church structures still standing in the state of Maryland. Thanks to benefactors on the occasion of its 300th anniversary in 1960, think about that for a minute, 300th anniversary, it was restored from its 1970s grandeur to its original 1670s wonder. And it is open 6 days a week, except on Saturdays, for you to go and take a look. And if you go down to Blackwater Marsh on the eastern shore of Maryland and go to Old Trinity Church, you will see a few things that might strike you as strange. One, the altar is not nearly as grand and glorious as ours. It is little more than a table set upon the east wall. The pulpit is in the middle of the long axis of the church. And showing the ingenuity of our colonial forebears, the pews in the front half of the church can switch directions. So that when the preacher is standing in the pulpit in the middle of the church, he's not got your back. Also of interest at Trinity Church in Blackwater are two massive stone tablets that stand on each side of the door, clearly visible to all who exit from the church out into the world. On one stone tablet is inscribed the Deuteronomical list of who you should not marry. Include, well, not people you don't like, but like your mom. Or your sister. Or your mom's sister. All of the things that have been codified in different ways in different states over the years. But on the other one, and perhaps more important to today's conversation, is a list of the Ten Commandments. And so there, inscribed in stone, on each side of the door, are the rules for preserving the genetic viability of a small colony and the rules of civil society. Now, this image came flooding back to me the other day when I was at a Bible study, and we were talking about the Ten Commandments, and it came up as we were reading down through particularly the latter half of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, those things. The question came up, who needs to be told these things? Yes, they may be the rules of civil society, but are they not so ingrained in who we are as human beings that we do not need to be reminded? Who were these Hebrews that God had to spell out so specifically, thou shalt not kill? Well, interestingly, they were probably not a lot different than the early Marylanders. The first murder recorded in the colony of Maryland took place in 1651. And during the period from 1700 to 1725, more than 248 murders were committed in the colony of Maryland. Obviously, they weren't reading it as they walked out of the church. Since the time of Cain, straight up through the time of Moses, we have been a people with a history of violence. It may make us wonder why God needed to be so explicit when he told us, do not murder. But all we need to do is check the historical record to find out that in too many times and in too many places, we have as a society and a species been too willing to murder. And it is also the case that it doesn't necessarily get much better. Turning the page, hardly many pages, on the book of Exodus, you find more killing, more wanton destruction. Even David, even Solomon, even the citizens of colonial Maryland. It never really gets any better. Thus, the logic of today's parable is a little challenging to me. Whether you understand the landowner in Jesus' parable as a metaphor for God or as an exemplar of real life, you have to wonder, what was this guy thinking? He had lent out his vineyard to tenants. He had sent slaves to collect his produce. This was the agreement that had been arranged, and they killed the slaves. Maybe he was living in some kind of Old Testament Ten Commandment dreamy place, thinking, oh, well, they won't kill any more slaves if I send them more slaves. And they killed them too. What was he thinking when he sent his son? I just have trouble believing what the text records of the man's thought process. Surely they will respect my son? No way! This was a people with a history of violence. From a larger community with a history of violence. Shoot, even the audience of Jesus' parable jumps in at the end. What would he do to them? Well, of course, he'd kill them. And maybe we would too. The history of violence is so present in this text, is so present in our society, that I wonder sometimes how we have survived at all. No matter how many times we are told, do not murder. At the end of the day, peace does not come naturally to us. As is written all across our culture, and sadly of late all across the news. So what does God do with all of this violence? What does God do with all of the brokenness? Some might suggest that that is the topic of the entire Bible. We don't have time to get into all that today. And so we'll stay in the world of Jesus' parable and in his teachings, where after the audience's violent outbreak, certainly he will put them to a miserable death, Jesus seems to change the subject. Or at least he mixes the metaphor a bit. From vineyards and tenants and ownerships and produce, he turns the corner to builders and architects and stones and dwellings. He says, the stone that the builders have rejected has become the chief of the corner. This is God's doing, he says. And it is marvelous in our sight. It is amazing in our sight. This thing that God has done with this stone that has been cast out confuses us, is what Jesus is saying. Now, yes, this is a standard statement about the Christ, and for those of us who read the gospel text through the lens of Jesus' ultimate passion and crucifixion and resurrection and the birth of the church, we see perhaps where he is going there. This son who was turned over to the hands of the violent tenants will become the very foundation of a renewed relationship with God. But I think we can also see this as a metaphor for us. What is to be done with a stone that is broken? What is to be done with a people who at their core are violent? What is it to be done with a community that just can't take a hint? The stone that the builders would reject, Jesus says, can become the chief of the corner. And this will be God's doing, even if it is marvelous in our sight.
God still seeks, Jesus says. It will be taken away from you and given to those who bear the fruit of righteousness. God is still interested in finding people and cultures and nations and societies that will live up to the standards that He has set before us. And God still comes back to those who, through their track record of disobedience and violence and misbehavior, are seemingly to be left out on the rubbish heap of history. And God reengages with all of those groups in the hope that this building that He is building upon the foundation of Jesus will one day become the grand and glorious church that He has promised to place in His kingdom. And so, my friends, as we end another week contemplating the violence of our society, perhaps wrestling some of us individually with the violence that may live within us, we look collectively for a sign of hope. And I stand before you this morning to offer you that hope. To say that no matter what we think about our society, no matter what we think about our community, what we think about ourselves, God still seeks us. He still reengages us. And He will still use us. Even us. To build His kingdom. Amen.